Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Have you been seriously injured? Mama Justice is here for you. Our medical team partners with top-notch doctors, surgeons, therapists, and urologists, ensuring a comprehensive recovery journey. If you've been injured, call Mama Justice today. We're here for you.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Buen dia. Dobroho Ranku. And by the way, laissez les bon temps rouler. Today is a day of many cultures here on the Garden Mama Show. Welcome in. Good morning. My goodness, what a beautiful day.
Let the good times roll.
Well, exactly.
I know that part of what you said.
They people marching. There's just different ways to say good morning.
I honestly wish you and I were hosting this show down there.
On a float
with stuff, you know, flowers everywhere.
Well, I think if we talk really hard to Ricky Matthews, we might get an invitation to the coast. So.
Ricky's got the in on it.
I'm serious.
He knows what's going on down there. We have a great crew, too. It's so funny in Mississippi, and I know we have a lot of folks that we partner with that listen to us on Saturdays too, like Joel and Ansami and Natasha. I was just visiting with them. They're listening. They're up in Washington, D.C.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you. I know y'all been busy.
Buen dia.
But yeah, it's this, you have such definitive zones in Mississippi. I was trying to explain that the other day, not nearly as well as you do or as eloquently, about once you get to about Hattiesburg South, you could grow anything. You could just put it on the concrete and it's probably going to grow.
Except lilies of the valley and rhododendrons and the things that grow in North Carolina.
Right.
But we're a bigger state and we represent the entire Southeast in those zone, that whole zone business, with the exception of the upper peaks of Tennessee.
We don't quite get that cold. And I wanted to say,
we're chilly though. I know y'all. Good morning.
I apologize if I didn't get the number. What zone is the southern zone? That zone
nine.
I was going to say eight, but I knew I was wrong.
If you think of South Florida, you think 10. Okay. That's actually the tropics, and that goes into the Caribbean.
We're in eight up here,
but we're in eight.
Yeah, nine is below us.
What happens each time they do a map, which is every 10 years thus far. For about the last, I think, 100, they tell us where the average temperatures are and when the first frost tends to be and all of those, the last one and all that stuff, which is what gives us these zones. It's based on weather data. And it's been very reliable. The changes over the last decade or two have literally moved our warmer zone even further north, and that's nice for me, but I mean, I don't grow lilies of the valley or rhododendrons or anything. So anyway, something for everybody in this part of the world when it comes to the garden. For those of you who are wondering, and I know you are, it is the first Saturday of the month, March 1st. Peaches is not here because he will be here next week. So good morning to him. He's out working.
He's out rocking and rolling this morning.
So we will see him. In his honor, I bring to you the succession of daisies. If you are not planting daisies, perennial daisy plants, in your garden, containers, beds, big places, small places, you're missing a bet. For cut flowers as well as for just the joy of looking out there and seeing them in the flower bed, this is the thing. We have four varieties that will bloom one after the other, so you can actually have daisies for more than just, a short period of time. The first one that blooms is May Queen, but of course here in our part of the world, she blooms at least in April, if not a little sooner. But that's an oxeye type. Then it's the Alaska's. Snow Lady is one variety that comes before the classic Alaska. And then finally Becky, which is the one that we see all the time and is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful flower. So if you're interested in succession daisy planting, thanks to my horticulture hero, Mark Patrick, it is May Queen, Snow Lady, Alaska, and the very dependable Becky. Okay. You'll see him here next week. We're on supertalk.tv today looking at nice stuff. Send us your photos, please, on the text line. Lance will put them up to be seen. One of my themes this week is that new growth is always fun. And one of the photos that you will see are the brand new leaves on my lemon tree. I did get up yesterday morning and run out because it was a little chillier than I had hoped, but it's fine. It made the transition from the cold room in my house to the slightly cooler spot outside. Not much cooler, but a little bit. Worked out very, very well. On the menu today, it is National Sage Day. And for those of you who, like me, can have a little bit of sage, but a lot is not the thing, it is also National Pig Day. So I propose we make sausage myself.
It's a good mix there.
It's sage a good and mix. Pig, yeah. I can do that. You know, I can appreciate that.
It's grilling meats.
Well, and sage is, of course, sage has so much lore associated with it in terms of being a cleansing herb, both in the air as well as in your body, and I presume in the sausage too. I think when you cook it, it's still supposed to be okay.
Yeah, I hope so.
You know,
well, I eat it. Well, that sage in there is good
say,
for you.
Let's say still useful.
Yeah.
Okay. But somebody was asking me about the thyme. There's a picture today of the thyme bed, and there's also one of goji berries. And I have to just tell Corinne, I was today years old when I discovered that the other name for that, there's two other names for the goji berry. She gave me the plant. One is matrimony vine, which I don't really understand at all, and the other is wolfberry, which I kind of get. But they are good for you. We all know about that. People, you read about that stuff, and then you wonder, could I grow it? And the answer is yes. In Zone 8, you absolutely can. Mine is put on brand new growth, which is in the photos today. It's another one of my, oh, I like new growth. It's a nice thing. And a pretty plant when it is in leaf, and even more beautiful when it makes fruit that you can eat, makes berries that you can eat. If you're allergic to things like strawberries, you might want to hold back a little bit because it's kind of potent in terms of vitamin C, which is one of its benefits. But it's just one of those things that as we begin to talk about growing food and growing things to eat, then it's one of the ones you should have on your list. I also want to talk today about pansies. I'm very fond of pansies, and I think you probably are too. We certainly plant enough of them in the South. There's some great lore to go along with that. And I've also got quite a few things to say about growing plants in containers, particularly with reference to their water. So please weigh in today. Give me a call. Send me a text. And, those are my pansies. I was really impressed with that flower yesterday.
Well, the manure bar comic was
you like
in
the
front
manure
of that
bar?
One. Yeah, I had to pause that. I wanted everybody to see that. I wonder what the bartender at a manure bar looks like.
Well, I'm afraid to ask, but the idea is that the plants are bellied up to the manure bar, and they can have their choice of bat guano and cow manure and all that kind of stuff. And it's just one of those things that makes gardeners laugh at each other.
Oh, I love that.
That they have taps, you know.
Oh, no, there's taps and everything. You got bar stools.
Come on
bar,
over to,
taps,
and they have napkins. Coasters, they have napkins. Yeah. Come on over to supertalk.tv and share a little humor with me. I always do that in honor of our folks that can't send them in anymore. So it's a fun, fun set of cartoons today. The new growth on the lemon has been greatly impressive. Yes, I will fertilize it in probably another couple of weeks. I fertilized it in November to keep it going indoors, and now it has put out some new growth, so that will need some nourishment shortly. I was looking at some old notes of mine. There are a couple of lemons that reliably bear in the summer because they bloom in the fall. And when they bloom in fall, of course, the time it takes to get that lemon to make a lemon and then mature is usually about 8 or so months at least. But there are some that bloom in the fall, but mine has always bloomed in winter. And Meyer lemons, this is not a Meyer, but this particular lemon that I have also blooms in the winter, and so therefore I'm harvesting in autumn. It takes a long time. You can see why families that have grown citrus for years and years in commercial production have such a tough go. There's changing conditions, there's changing pests, and your whole world is wrapped up in months and months and months of production for that particular plant. It's really something.
8 months, though, for a full, beautiful lemon.
Yep.
That is, as a lime, I guess, on the same.
A little bit shorter.
A little bit shorter.
Mm-hmm.
That is some commitment.
It is. And grapefruit, you know, will bear two or three times if the tree is old, in the tropics. But up in our part of the world, it's one or two fruit would be great. Lemons will bear a lot more. Kumquats, even better.
Well, you got the satsumas down south of
us. Satsumas, yeah. People grow I was looking at our friend Gary Bachman's collection of citrus. He's on the coast of Mississippi, obviously, but he also grows all of his citrus in containers so that he can put them into the garage when it's getting chilly. He obviously will do that if it freezes, but like me, he doesn't want them to slow down. So I have a cold room in my house where the lemon tree stays. It doesn't ever get freezing or even below 40, and now it's outside and has an opportunity to put its new growth on in a hurry so I can get some flowers. I did see one flower bud yesterday, but I don't want to jinx it by saying that it'll still be there today. The first ones are a little iffy, so you have to wait and see. That's a beautiful picture.
Looks healthy.
Looks like it just needs a little tofu with it, and it would be just lovely. Interesting stuff.
Balsamic vinaigrette, maybe.
A little flavor. Sure, absolutely, absolutely. I am watering containers already. Now, this is mostly indoors right now, but I don't water a whole lot indoors. So when I take things outside, I really do have to give them some water. And this week, even though I'm looking at rain next week at my house, I've been watering the herbs that are in the big containers. I watered the goji berry, watered a few other things like that, just to be sure that I don't lose any ground. I don't want them to dry out too much when the weather is chilly. That can really be a setback for some of your plants. I have some ideas about watering in containers. One of the things that you need to know is that you kind of get what you pay for in a watering can. That is to say, if you want one with a long spout on it that's going to be able to go into like a mixed container and water really close up to things, or water things that don't like their leaves to get wet, you're probably going to spend a little money. It's a good investment. You should do it. Give yourself a present. It's a really good idea. It's also true that there's not an answer to the most common question. Is it better to water from the bottom of, in the saucer, or is it better to water from the top? The answer is, it depends. Well, there's not a best, there's a difference. There are actually the two ways to water. One, there's three. There's one, just wait for it to rain. That's not the one we're talking about. But in the two ways, you water slowly so that the soil can really absorb all that you're putting in, and to continue that until the water flows out the bottom. Don't let it sit in the container. Dump that out somewhere and then refill the headspace so that it goes through one more time to percolate. Again, it's a very slow process in this case. It's very thorough watering, and it's something that you want to do for houseplants, or plants in the house, even if they're not traditionally houseplants, for plants in the house as frequently as possible, at least every 2 weeks, every month at this time of the year. Through the colder part of the winter, it wasn't as important. But now we're trying to get these things boosted up and ready to start growing again. I will tell you again, do not let the water sit under the plant because it will take it back up from the saucer, and that water often is toxic. So you don't want to do that. Well, what about if you need to keep the leaves dry? African violets, gloxinias, other kinds of things that just don't like their leaves to be wet. You can use traditional wick systems, and you can make them yourself, or you can purchase the plants. You can use a reservoir pot, so you're just watering from the bottom. Those things all work, but mainly you have to make them work. You have to keep the reservoir full. I say this to you because I just yesterday looked at one of my reservoir pots, and it was drier than a bone. It was terrible, so I had to add some water to it really quickly. And within about 10 minutes, that plant had sucked it all up. So I put some more in just to make sure that it was going to be okay. Growing without soil? Yeah, growing in water? Yeah, we do that too. There's no question about that. Somebody else asked me about do-it-yourself, whether or not you can actually make your own earth box, quote unquote. Yeah, you can. It's not an earth box because that's a manufacturer's brand and an important one. But you can certainly do that. And it's not difficult to do. There are designs all over the place. The thing I would tell you about it is that you do need to build that soil properly. That's the biggest difference in growing in a container that is watered in this way from the bottom. You got to get that soil right, or it won't take the water up, and therefore your plants won't grow. So that's the scoop on water. I like telling you these things because I know it's important, but it's also things that you may or may not have asked me before. Oh, hey, Andrea. Andrea's got the same daffodil that I've got blooming here in the studio this morning. How lovely. That's just beautiful. Can't remember its name. If you know it, tell me, because I've forgotten.
And the bottles are growing well, too.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They look lovely. I'm very fond of blue bottles. I think, you know, they just have an appeal to me.
I love the blue bottle, and I love the light green with the, what do they call it, the milked?
Oh yeah, milk glass.
Oh man, mm-hmm. The green ones
are
so
pretty. Beautiful. Those are lovely, no doubt about that. It is an interesting day for pansies, y'all. Everybody's out looking at them because they're one of the things. For example, even in my bed that everything's happy in, I'm being invaded by chickweed and I'm being invaded by henbit, and those are not things I want in that bed. But the pansies are pretty aggressive. It's the snapdragons that are getting run over. So just when you look at your pansies, if you find weeds in them, good, get rid of them. But don't forget to look at the snapdragons because they've probably got a little bit more. I don't know, they're more easily invaded, I think. In Shakespeare, of course, pansies, that's where it comes from. When you see all that, you know, the language of flowers and all those things, the pansies are for thoughts. And it's because of a line in a couple of different places that they take it pensées. The name of pansy comes from that, which is French for thought. So that's where that comes from. In the other part of the world, though, In back even longer ago than that, the pansy was a white flower, and this is all in lore, of course, but the pansy was a white flower, and it was shot by Cupid, and that's when it turned purple and other colors. It broke into other colors. The fact that it has the little faces in it, you know, the three petals at the center, is said to be the result of a love triangle between Zeus and his wife and a third person. Anyway, his wife, of course, was Hera, and she was a very powerful person. She turned the third person into a cow, and presumably.
They had that power back then.
Apparently, you know, they did.
Like to change folks into other things.
We tell some good stories, we human beings, don't we? But at any rate, we... interestingly enough, we think of pansies being for thought, but over the years, it's also a symbol of romantic feelings in Victorian England. That's part of that flower language business. And in A Midsummer Night's Dream, they're used in a love potion. So there you go.
Love Potion number 9. Wasn't that like
I guess
an 80s
so.
Movie?
It probably was. It was a 60s rock and roll song. Don't play it.
Had to be an 80s movie then.
Probably was. I love that this is love in idleness. I don't know what that means, but that's the other translation of it. It's weird. Everything's got lore, y'all. We human beings, we sit around and think of stuff. You want to know a story? If there's not one, you can make it up. Let's make up stories about pansies. What do you say? Give me a call this morning. Now go get some coffee. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from 3 licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
We have one voice, the voice of agriculture. We have one job, growing the products you need every day. We have one mission, fighting for agriculture and rural Mississippi. We have you in mind, caring for your private property rights. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Is that a new...
Well, I got a little garden in my backyard, a little hoeing, a little mowing, but the work ain't hard. It's the cutest little place that you ever did see. I've been working in the garden till I turn green.
A
If you happen to be looking in at supertalk.tv and just saw me try to adjust the chair, yeah, the wheels are stuck. In case anybody's worrying that I'm falling out of the chair, I'm not. I'm dragging it with my feet.
You're gonna jack it up here in a minute.
Well, I'm dragging it with my feet.
Find a replacement coaster.
Exactly. Welcome back. You know, this is the best time of year to be a gardener because everybody thinks they're a gardener when you get to March. That's really what's so much fun about it. We get to spread our passion and our enthusiasm around, and everybody's willing to listen. You know, try to have this conversation at Thanksgiving, they're not going to pay any attention to you. But if you want to talk about your favorite tomato or why you grow four kinds of squash or, you know, any of those other things, this is the time. It's also the time when everybody wants to know, how did you get those rose bushes to look so nice? How come your stuff looks better than my stuff? You know, all of those things. And that also gives you the opportunity to share a few, maybe just a few little bits and pieces of things. The difference in our part of the world and the rest of the world, today is the first day of the Iditarod dog race. Okay. You know they had to move it last year because there wasn't enough snow.
There wasn't enough snow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was going to say, that's a snowy type of endeavor there.
Yeah.
Cold.
Yeah.
Dogs love it, it looks like.
Apparently they have a great time.
Yeah. They're just out frolicking. You know?
But we don't have to face that here, I'm happy to say. And that's the best news of the day.
17 is about that here for us. I mean, if it gets 15, 17 degrees, and that's equivalent for a southerner.
It makes me cold to think about it. I don't even want to think about it.
Hopefully those days, you know, for right now, are behind us. Would you feel that we're going to have anything in that freezing now?
I'm going to sound like everybody else. There'll probably be another cold snap. Mm-hmm. It's called blackberry winter.
Yeah.
Comes when the blackberries are in bloom and it gets cold enough to knock the flowers off. Sometimes it's a problem, but I don't know how cold and I don't know when.
It was about 45 when I got up this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty, you know, not 10 degrees above the, around the mid-30s, but I felt it was pretty chilly to me. And then all of a sudden, it's, you know, feels 70.
Mm-hmm.
Out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a lot of that, it feels like.
I'm watching the latest atmospheric current coming on the West Coast, which is going to be with us in this part of the world by about Tuesday night, I think they're saying now. It's an astounding, usually, you know, it used to be that the mountains and the desert stopped those things from coming this way. It doesn't happen anymore. They're too powerful. It's too jazzed up by the time it gets to the West Coast. It just blows on through and gets here. And that's why we have to be better gardeners. Sometimes that's why we grow in containers, because that's actually the better place for control. Now, I don't mean that all your containers need to have wheels on them, but it's helpful if the big ones do. Because if you need to get them out of the wind or you need to get them, you know, into a sheltered location for one reason or another, then it's probably a good idea, you know, to think about those casters. You see them, it's another thing that you think, well, but it's a good investment. And my lemon tree does have one, and it makes my life a lot easier. I'll tell you the truth.
That thing's mobile.
Yeah, it has to be.
Rolling.
Well, I mean, I'm finicky. I don't want, like I say, I don't want it to get slowed down, and I want lemons. So because I'm real clear about that, I'm willing to put in the other bit of work. You asked last week what was going on at Max Planck. Max Planck wants to know, how well do you really know your fish? That is the question here. It's my question, but it's their story. This is just crazy. The scientific divers at a research station in the Mediterranean Sea have been aware of a problem for quite some time. Along the way, in every season of testing the data and, you know, collecting the fish's counts and all of those things that they do, the local fish would follow them in the water and steal the food that was intended as the reward for the experiment. In other words, you say, come here, and you feed them. Well, they were coming here anyway and taking the food without any input from the scientists. Pretty smart fish, right? Intriguingly, the wild fish apparently recognized the particular diver who had previously carried the food and only followed that person when other people were in the water. I love this. Now, the fish have names for us, obviously. This one over here is Food Guy, you know, so I'm thinking everybody else has got a name, too. We've just got to find out. So to figure out if this was true, they conducted a bunch of experiments wearing a range of diving gear so that it was the same person but didn't look the same. And yes, the fish can in fact discriminate among the humans based on those external visual clues. I love that. Max Planck Institute of Animal Health. We now have to know our fish better. There's no question. If you've ever had a tank, of course, you know that they will, some of them, not all of them, but some of them will absolutely know when you walk up and will follow you across the tank to where you're going to drop the feed because that's where you dropped it before. And it's fun to watch. It's also fun to distract them and put it somewhere else, you know, just to be. Yeah, I had a lot of time with my fish tank at other points in my life. Goodness gracious. My Osage orange lost all of its leaves due to the freeze about a month ago. Will it come back? I imagine so. I can't tell you about its future in terms of this year's, you know, making going forward and how big the leaves are going to get. Are you going to lose any ground? I can't tell you. But I don't think that the temperatures were cold enough in Hattiesburg to kill the tree. I'll take a look at a couple of lists of things. I don't think it was. Wonderful tree. But yeah, we had a lot of things with new growth on it, but that didn't usually hurt the plant. Okay, I'm writing that down so I don't forget to go look. Now, there's some things that are happening, I hope, in your garden that are happening in mine as well. And one of them is this business of all the herbs are just proliferating. They suddenly jumped. Parsley, celery, oreganos, everybody that kind of tends to go a little bit sadder, you know, in the cold weather, the oreganos and the thymes both have bounced back up. Fertilize them. We don't feed those plants very often. So I want to tell you now that now is the time. In this particular part of the world, we really don't have to fertilize a lot when it's a plant that we're trying to get to grow so that it's full of oil and tightly packed in its own thrifty growth. We have an opportunity, you know, to take care of it that way. But this is the point in the year where you want to feed the parsley, then you want to also feed your perennial herbs too. Okay? Okay. Ooh. Wow, this is one of those things I hate to tell you because I don't know how long it's going to take to get them in. You may want to buy your caladium bulbs locally this year, and you may want to talk to your garden center about where they are and when they're going to be there because there's not as many, and the shipping is costing a whole lot from what I am told. I don't buy them in bulk myself, but that's what I'm given to understand. I love caladiums. We often plant them too soon, and that's why we need to either go ahead and buy the ones that have been started in a warm space that are already with leaves on them, or we need to wait and plant them after the soil warms up. The main thing about buying caladiums, whether you buy them locally or whether you buy the bulbs, through the mail, is to make sure that they are not soft. If you put your hands into the box and you find soft bulbs, send them back. Because, and obviously that's given that you opened them promptly and all that sort of stuff. But it's important to get bulbs that are in good shape. And if you don't, you won't get any leaves, and that doesn't help. To keep them warm, sometimes people will pot them up and put them in pot to pot, you know, one in a collection, and then put some mulch over the top of those pots until they can sprout. I'm not so much for that. I prefer to start them in flats and then just transplant them to where they're going to go after they're all up. I don't know. I guess both things can work. I don't see why not. Something else you need to fertilize is the ground covers that are sprouting. I looked up and saw that the ajuga that I thought was maybe not going to come back did beautifully. So it's got lots of leaves on it. Now's the time to fertilize those things. It really doesn't matter what you use. You might use something that's left over from lawn food or something like that. Not weed and feed, of course, but if you've got some leftover slow release, I don't know, lawn fertilizer from last summer. If you've got fertilizer that you've used on flowers and things or shrubs, it's all good. At this point, you're really just trying to give them a little something to help boost their root growth. So you do want it to be lower nitrogen, higher phosphorus and potassium if possible, 5, 10, 10, something in that sort of arrangement of numbers, and give them the opportunity to take advantage of it. I think it's real, real good to do that at this point. You've just cut them back. And the same thing is true, really, of fountain grasses and that sort of stuff. If they need to be fertilized, mine don't, but you might be trying to get yours to get thicker. And in that case, you do want to give them a little more phosphorus and a little bit more potassium. This is still still decent time for planting fruit trees. I've had several people ask me this week, in fact, if because they see them on sale. And I'm saying, yeah, go ahead. Just be aware that when you plant, as they are starting to leaf out or bloom or whatever, you got to be more attentive to their water needs. Huckleberry bushes, lucky for you, my goodness. They're in full bud and some are blooming. Will wetting them down with a water hose be the best way to protect them if you get a frost? Yes. And at what point in bloom will the frost not hurt them? I have no idea. It really depends on the temperature at that particular time. And the gradient, usually, if it gets cold enough to knock the flowers off, then you know that you've got a bigger problem than if it doesn't. How much do we love huckleberries? That, you know, I don't know if anybody ever sat around a table, but we had native huckleberries, we had native blueberries in this part of the world, and the blueberries, I think, were easier to find and easier to cultivate in terms of the breeders getting them growing and getting them out into the market. We very seldom find huckleberries in the market, and that's a shame because they are delicious. Can I fertile? Oh, this is a good question. I hope this isn't a setup. Are you an Epsom salt aficionado?
I love Epsom salt.
Can I fertilize with Epsom salt? Sure. but you're what you're getting with Epsom salt is not a complete fertilizer. It doesn't have trace elements in it, doesn't have nitrogen in it, has some elements in it, calcium, magnesium, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's good for a lot of things. It's good for strengthening cell walls, but it's usually applied as a spray when the plants are in bloom, or after they, for example, in the case of roses, after the roses have gone into bud but are not open, they will spray with that to strengthen those cell walls in a very local way. Bell peppers are a different story. In my home state of Louisiana, they grow bell peppers by the acre, and the Epsom salt has a really good effect on their strength of their cell wall there because the soils are naturally a little bit more acid. They're older soils, and so you kind of do want a little bit extra to give them that boost. If you're interested, I'm pretty sure it's epsomsalt.org and tell you about 4,000 things you can do with it. I have never found it necessary because I don't grow bell peppers or I don't grow anything like that commercially. When I grew tomatoes commercially, they were small tomatoes, so I didn't experiment with it then. But I have certainly seen a lot of people use it with good success, and it's just don't leave out the other elements is what I'm saying. Okay. Epsom salt. It's a good topic. Really, really good topic. You know what else you can do right now? You can plant a teacher salad and be eating it before the end of the year in your classrooms. Take it as a gift. Let the kids plant. Take the materials up there. You'll find one of your teachers certainly is going to want that and will enjoy helping the kids see stuff grow in the classroom or right outside the back door or something like that, wherever it's convenient. A lot of times we think about wanting things to be colorful as well as tasty, not just for kids, but for grown-ups too. But in this particular case, a really, really pretty combination is the Bright Lights Swiss chard, which has orange and bright pink and stems that are brightly colored. Really, really wonderful plant. Some kind of lettuce, a mesclun mix probably is a really great idea for this because, it's all different colors. And my particular favorite, of course, radishes, because you can put in red radishes and white radishes and long radishes and short radishes and, just really grow a box full of salad and enjoy it. Give kids the opportunity. Give them that power to be able to grow some of their own food. And I think you will never regret doing that. Absolutely. Now, don't plant your tomatoes, she said. Having said that, if you're growing in containers, and like mine, they're great big and black plastic, and therefore they're going to stay hot. The soil in there is real warm in the sunlight anyway, and you're going to be able to cover up the plants. Well, you know, if they're getting a little too large in the seedling rack like mine are, you probably want to go ahead and plant them, but be sure you've got that cloche ready. Be sure you've got a tomato cage you can turn upside down and put plastic on, or you've got some sort of hat for that plant, because there's going to be lots of days that are too windy, too wet, and too cold for them. But if you can keep the soil warm and keep the top protected, yeah, you can go. You can grow some. I'm not necessarily endorsing planting tomatoes and strawberries at the same time, although I see them on the racks around town. But yeah, you can certainly plant the strawberries and maybe the tomatoes if you'll protect them. Okay, all right. What do you think? We'll be back.
Carry on, carry on. Don't cry, baby. Look at where you've been. Everybody knows. On your knees, carry on, carry on. Your head is full of doubt, you can't figure it out. Carry on.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
He can sing too. I gotta tell you, it's a real good thing that my family worked on the railroad, because my grandfather would never have met my grandmother, and I never would have been here if they hadn't worked on the railroad. They crawled up out of the fields and went to work in the Depression, and I'm very happy for that. I appreciate them very much. It was hard, but they did it.
That's some tough work.
Yep. My grandfather worked with my grandmother's brothers. And therefore, you know, you have to introduce them to your sister.
There you go, yeah. That's my sister over there.
That's right.
Yeah, I was eyeballing her. You mind if I ask her on a date?
She's pretty cute.
Yeah, pretty cute girl.
And of course,
have her home by 7.
Well, then she had the review from all of them, whether he was worth her time.
Yeah, well, that, you know, if you have brothers, so of course you're going to get input. You
know, exactly. Even if you don't want it.
Like, my sister didn't want my input.
Too bad.
I know what he's going to say. No, you're not dating.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is that we survive all of that, and I'm glad that they did. So we're lucky enough to have folks that worked hard and got us where we are today. That's a good thing.
Well, and thank goodness they did, like you said.
GM wouldn't be here.
I always think of those things. I don't know if I'm strange in the way I think, but it's always amazing to me how couples work. Finding that person, and then and then the longevity and the family and the DNA and all that going for generations. It's amazing. It takes two people finding each other.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Happiness, and, you know, and then you have this huge thing that happens after that. It's amazing.
We are descendants, you know, from somewhere.
Somewhere, and something.
No one's figured out.
Thank goodness they figured it out.
Because here we are.
Yep.
So that's a good thing. I have a couple of ideas about the. I don't know how to say this. I realize that control burn is not an oxymoron, but we have to realize that wind makes a burn uncontrolled pretty quick, as happened yesterday in your home county out in Rankin. And I'm going to tell you that I think we need to burn more, and we need to burn more with more control because we got lots of dead trees. So what are we going to do with all of that? We've got trees that we can't, you know, you can't recycle the wood from a tree that's been destroyed by borers, and they have to cut down thousands of them. We've been doing this for years now and going to have to do it for a while longer. But what happens then? Because it certainly makes a big mess, and you don't want to go back in and just plant a bunch of trees on top of the mess or whatever you're going to do with it. So what are you going to do? I have a word for you today, friends. Biochar. Yep, that's right. Beyond the burn, as they say, harvesting dead wood to reduce wildfires, store carbon, and frankly, make great soil amendments. Florida Atlantic University's got a new study out that I'm so happy. I love it when studies affirm what I think. Makes me feel so good because I've studied this stuff and I've watched it, but I didn't have anybody to cite, and now I do. So Florida Atlantic is telling us about the whole thing that particularly out west, but we can see it here too. Fire suppression plus the increasing warmth of the climate and drought conditions have ended up making a whole lot of dead wood out there. Deforestation and pests like we have here with the pine tree borers are a big problem too. So what are we going to do with all of this stuff? Well, here's what I wish we could do. If we can understand that the physical harvest of this wood turns into, first of all, it reduces the wildfire risk when it's a tree that's already been, you know, attacked by the pest or something. It's not going to do anything but stand there and catch on fire if you leave it alone or fall on top of somebody. So in the absence of oxygen, through a process called pyrolysis, we can work and create biochar. And biochar is a really, you pay a whole lot for this stuff. If you order a bag of it, go look. It's not cheap. And then they have to mail it to you. So if we can make it our own, this is another industry, even a cottage industry, that we could be doing with resources that we have lots of right here in the South. Biochar plays a significant role in carbon sequestration. 1 ton of biochar can sequester carbon that would otherwise generate 3.5 tons of carbon dioxide if left to degrade naturally. Come on now. And then we put it to use. It improves soil fertility, it increases water retention, and it then in turn has that beautiful sequestration of carbon going for it. Biochar. Listen to me. Talk to your friends. Let's make this happen.
With all the dead
sermon
trees
over
everywhere, you
well,
can
that's
have
what
a whole
I mean.
Industry just down Spillway Road,
exactly.
Down to 471.
Exactly. And the problem with, of course, I pay attention to these things. It costs so much to take the trees down that hauling them off is not even practical. Well, let's don't haul them off. Let's start a biochar plant, you know.
Yeah, they had to cut a bunch in the back from our house. And it was, you know, 10 or 12 just within a small acre, which were the huge pine trees.
A lot
and they
of
laid
material.
Them down.
It's a lot of material. Well, because it literally it's too big a deal. But we can make them into biochar. We can put them through the pyrolysis process, turn them into a benefit rather than something that we're trying to figure out how to get rid of.
Hey, I've been out there hacking on it for a couple of months, just burning limbs.
No kidding.
I'll tell you one thing, a dried piece of pine in an outdoor fire pit burns amazingly.
It's a beautiful experience. Yeah, it's a beautiful experience. And that's where all that carbon is. And that's what we're trying to keep. So we can then turn around and put it into the garden. Make it useful. Make it work for us instead of working against us. I'm all for that particular bit of something. Let's see. We have an ornamental maple.
I have that picture up for you.
I'm looking at that over here, too. How much can we cut it back? That's tough. It's we don't prune them very much, and because this one has a good bit of growth that's low and then some other growth that's high, I would say shape up that bottom part a little bit and see how the top does. And then probably you'll get some breaking along the trunk and get a couple more branches. What we'd like to have is two more branches to come out in the part where there's not any in the middle. That's probably just the result of how the tree grew in the first place. But I wouldn't take very much at all off the top, but I would take a little bit off of, you know, a couple, 3 or 4 inches off of these side pieces. That will keep it in a pyramid fashion, pyramid splay, but it will also encourage more new growth. I love those trees, and I do like them when they have their, when they have their really nice shape to them. I like that pyramidal thing that this one's got.
Corinne has a two-part text there. One is kudos to you on the newsletter.
Thank you very
great
much.
Great list of early, mid, and late blooming daffodils for our area. But she also had a good question there in there about transplanting spirea. And if she wanted the roots to grow more than actually the the bush or the plant.
You can, yes, you should prune when you transplant a shrub from one place to the other, or when you plant a new shrub that is, let's say, a 1 gallon pot and a 4 foot tall plant, you know, you do need to trim the top just a little bit so that it doesn't have to work as hard to get while it's putting on those roots. This is what root stimulator fertilizers are for. This is what compost teas are for. This is what I really, really, really like, vermicompost tea, where you take the worm castings and make a tea out of them, because they're full of everything that you need for that shrub to root. And you also, frankly, can fertilize other plenty of other things with it, too. But I like that. And you're right. We do want them to focus on root growth first before they have to put their tops on. It helps a whole lot. That's absolutely true. Yep, I've seen farmers take the ash from a paper mill and spread it over a cotton field. That's a very powerful use. As long as we're putting about an inch out, every field can take it, unless we're growing blueberries, you know, unless we're growing azaleas and camellias and things that really love that acid soil. The addition of the potash and also the soil sweetening, quote unquote, and pH effect of that ash is real, real important too. This is fun. I'm going to read these other ones. Oh, Ellie, that's beautiful. I love waxed amaryllis. We'll talk about them. She's taken it out, and it's been going. First two blooms, then four, and finally two more.
I have that ready to go for when we come back on the other side.
We'll get that in the next hour. Thanks for being here, y'all. Please don't go anywhere, because we'll be right here waiting for you.
Hi, I'm Billy Taylor, Executive Director at the Mississippi Department of Rehabilitation Services. Our agency works to help those we serve prepare for today and plan for the future. One way we do that is through the Mississippi ABLE program. This program provides the opportunity for individuals with disabilities to invest their money in tax-advantaged savings accounts without the fear of losing their public benefits. You can learn more or sign up by visiting MississippiABLE.com. That's MississippiABLE.com.
We are agriculture, the number one industry in Mississippi. We are 180,000 member families strong, a century of generations. We are grassroots Mississippi in all 82 counties. We are Unified, the largest general farm organization in Mississippi. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
You still thinking?
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
For those of you who've just joined us, the conversation today is going towards biochar and a bunch of other stuff. So we're going to keep going in a not exactly random garden point of view, but a lot of things to talk about today, a lot of things to be considered. Everybody seems to want to grow at least a little bit of food. You'll note that I did not say vegetable gardening, since but fruit and herbs are certainly a big part of what we're all up to. You can call this the I don't like what I get at the grocery, or something's not available, or everything costs too much. You can call it whatever you want it. I call it smart. If you're going to grow some of your own food, now is a good time to get it going. And in fact, food gardening is more popular than it has ever been before. You need to know what you like to eat. If you're going to plant 14 squash plants, I hope you have friends that like squash, or that you're planning to put some up in jars and whatnot. So figure out what it is that you want to grow and what you, based on what you want to eat. It'll make you a better gardener as well as a better eater, because you'll know a little bit more about controlling soil conditions and water conditions and fertilizer and all the things that it takes to do some growing, okay? If it seems like too much trouble to dig up another bed in the garden, don't. Get hay bales. Get containers. Use old spaces where nothing's really doing too much good for you anymore and give it all a chance to produce a little bit of food. Might be a fig tree. Might be the goji berry I was talking about before, or it might be some tomatoes and squash and the classic things that we think of in the springtime, getting ready for all of that. Whatever you're doing, to grow food, you need about 6 hours of sun every day, at least. And in fact, to get the most from all of this, the well-drained soil and the sun are at least as important as variety choices and water. Okay, fertilizer is a whole nother thing. We talk about that at another date. But I really want to make sure that you get yourself access to water and have the will to use it. It might take a little bit of doing to get a drip system or the right sprinklers or however you're going to do it. But figure that out and you'll make yourself a better gardener. You'll make yourself a better eater too. And I appreciate that all very, very much. Not only will you like the way it looks, but it'll make you better at what everything else that you grow too. Think about food gardening. All right.
One thing I was going to add to that, because Mike had a great point. Mike from Houston, he always has some interesting things to share.
Mm-hmm.
He says sometimes you plant seeds and you really forget or don't remember exactly where they were or what color the flower may be. He said, mm-hmm. go get you a bag of 1,000 coffee stirs, the multiple color ones. He goes, cut them in half and spike them. If it's a red one, put
it's
it
there. That's a good idea.
I said, man, that's a great idea. He goes, and it's cheap, too. Yeah. Then you have a good idea of where stuff is.
Yeah, that is a good idea.
Well, thank you, Mike, for
that. He's always got some good tips.
Yeah, he's
for
a good
us.
Guy.
The good questions on the text line today, too. The Dracaenas and Diefenbachias, how big do they get? Well, they get as big as the container you grow them in. These are tropical plants that get to be quite large in their native environments, but we grow them in containers. And if you move the plant up each year to a container just slightly larger, the plant will continue to grow as long as you're willing to deal with the bigger pot and the weight that it brings and the space it takes up in your house. Fertilizer on a regular basis for both of those is very important because they will use up everything that's in their soil. And also, of course, you don't want to let things be so dry that they wilt or have any drop any leaves from being too dry or anything like that. But other than that, they're easy to grow. I like Dracaena warneckii. That's the one that he was showing me the other day. And I also really, really do like Diefenbachias. So if you're growing those, give them well-drained potting soil, move them up every year, and you'll have a bigger plant as time goes by. If you're growing vining plants like Pothos and Philodendron, remember the taller that the higher up they grow, the bigger their leaves get. So if you have totem poles or if you have other climbing structures for them to grow on, you'll have a much more interesting plant in a few years than if you just let it trail out. It's just the way they grow. And I think it's fun. I think you probably will like it too. Ooh, here's a good question. Y'all don't be judgmental now. My wife wants to get rid of the roses. I'm saying that part. He's not. He said my wife wants to get rid of the roses. What can I put back there that'll come back every year and have some color? Okay, if it's roses and they're growing there, there's probably plenty of sun to grow things like hydrangeas and spireas. If I had to put together some food for that space, I would probably go with figs and maybe, depending on where you are, pineapple guava, some of the other things that are pretty as well as healthy and delicious, okay? Maybe a bay tree. But if I'm going into something that's going to have flowers, I don't think there's anything any prettier than a mixed planting of hydrangeas. You use some big head ones, some of the French ones. You use some lace caps, and you use some limelight. You also put in some, perhaps even if you've got a shady corner of the bed, you put in an oak leaf hydrangea, and you've got a beautiful multi-month, multi-color, multi-size, lovely display of flowers. You can also do that with spireas. We start with the ones that bloom in early spring, like bridal wreath, but you can go all the way through the summer with the shorter, smaller Japanese hybrid spireas that have pink flowers on them, and it's another color to add to it, but it's also very lovely and they're easy to grow. So I would go that direction. If height is a problem, I don't know, maybe do another, maybe do something else, like different varieties of abelia, or different varieties of nandina, because there are quite a few of those that have bright colored leaves but don't make berries, so they don't create any, you know, anything you have to clean up. How's that sound? Okay, I'm reading my own notes to myself here. I don't know why I'm doing that. If you would explain the tea you were just talking about. Oh, okay, sure. Interesting, Ray. You always have something. I read your other comments, and I shouldn't. I will explain, however, the manure tea and the vermicompost tea. You can sometimes buy these things in a liquid product. That's fine, but you're buying a lot of water. So you can make your own even more simply. In the case of, for example, if you took cow manure, if you had a bag of black cow or one of those good, you know, good solid cow manure products, and you have a 5-gallon bucket, you put 2 cups of manure in the bucket, fill it about halfway through with water, and let it sit there overnight. Then you've got compost tea. I mean, then you've got manure tea. That's a wonderful starter solution. You can do the same thing with vermicompost, that is to say worm compost. Make a vermicompost tea. But again, I don't want to buy the liquid because I don't want to buy the water. It's also heavy. So I'll take the package home and make my own in a 5-gallon bucket. It's easy to do, something people have been doing forever. If you have your own compost heap, obviously you can make your own compost tea, which is the same sort of quality. I always say, you know, quality in, quality out. If your compost is only leaves, it's going to be one sort of compost. But if you also have kitchen trimmings and lawn clippings and a nice green-brown mix of about 2 parts brown to 1 part green, you end up with a better product. Not that leaf mold and leaf pile compost isn't great. I've got it all over my place, to use it all the time. But it is a different product. Just something you need to know, okay? Something you probably wanted to know anyway. A little bit more on the food garden business that I'm so seriously involved in right now. I want you to understand that there are resources. Every cooperative extension around the country puts out lists of recommended varieties. But you can also go to your local garden center and get some assistance from somebody who's already there and growing them. A lot of places will have people that come together to talk specifically about vegetables. A lot of folks will have the opportunity to talk to somebody there and suddenly find out that this person's been growing, you know, blueberries for 20 years or something. You don't know until you ask. And if you have those conversations, you will find that you get something that really makes a lot of sense. Maybe the easiest of the vegetables to learn to grow are green beans or yellow beans. I'm seldom have a crop failure with those, although I still can't grow very good squash. But green beans are great, partly because no hand is unable to deal with them. It's not a tiny seed. It's not even like a radish seed where you put them in there and all of a sudden there's a million of them coming up. But bean seeds are easy to handle. You can get them in a compact bush bean size. You can get them in the kind that climb up the teepee, you know, that are running beans. There's a lot of choices, and there's some that you grow specifically for the beans and some that you grow only for the flowers. So it's fun to work all that. This is also a place where you can learn about how things work in terms of fixing nitrogen. If you over-fertilize beans, you will end up with a whole lot of leaf and not much bean, because those leaves fix nitrogen from the air and feed themselves. Okay, so this is something that's really exciting. This might all get you to grow beans, but you still say to yourself, "So why is that haricot vert so expensive?" That's the French name for small green beans. They're expensive because they have to pick them at a short size. They're growing a variety that doesn't get really long. It's usually a pencil pod shape, and it will be about 4 inches long when it's harvested. You can do that too. So grow some green beans. Fill a container. Put the front end of your flower bed, you know, where there's nothing in behind the monkey grass. Give yourself some green beans or yellow beans. They're the easiest to start with, and they're something you will never regret that you grew, because they're delicious.
Who is our listener? And I'm sure you probably remember the one that had the apps. It was the whole yard of rattlesnake beans and everything. It was absolutely covered.
That was Trey.
Trey, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that might be who it was. Amazing.
Yeah.
Goodness. And memories.
Yeah. Great memories.
Yes.
Great memories. That's for sure. We're lucky, you know. We get to know each other. We get to know each other's plants. We get to know each other's crops, and we get to celebrate. And we also get to be a little sad together. It's a very powerful force, this gardening.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Trey.
There are so many things to do in March. If this is when you look around and you say, well, gosh, there's new growth on everything. What should I fertilize? Well, a few things. You have specific questions you want to ask. I'll be happy to do that. Remember, though, you don't fertilize your lawn. In Mama's opinion, you don't fertilize your lawn until it begins to green up. The reason for that is because generally the lawn, I hate when people say, the lawn knows when to green up. Well, I don't know if it knows anything in the way that I know stuff, but it does generally react to conditions in a very positive way. That is to say, it won't green up if it's just about to freeze in 2 days. Okay? So let your conscience be your guide for all of that, but also be aware that if you wait until it greens up a little bit, you're in good shape for fertilizing. It also gives you the opportunity to see where the weeds are that you may or may not want to treat, might want to do something about in the next few weeks or months. And it also, frankly, saves you some time because you got so much else to do right now. This was large leaf pile making at my place, and changing the spaces and getting the tomato pots ready and getting everything where it belongs. There's a lot of that. And if you still haven't painted your trellises and you realize that it's going to fall over, you better go start with the wire and then get some paint and make that thing look better before the rose takes it down for the count. Because they will do that, you know. It happens. Here's the other question this morning. What is that potting soil recipe? Now you've told us how to make manure tea. What was your potting soil? Okay. For outdoor pots, these are the ones I'm going to grow my tomatoes in, take one bag of good potting mix, and you can call it a mix. I like that because it generally has a little fertilizer in it, maybe even some polymers. It may be potting soil, doesn't have those things in it, in which case you will certainly add a little fertilizer to it. Half a bag of ground pine bark and some kind of compost or a composted manure, a half a bag of that. Then, if you can get it, an inch of chicken manure. A lot of places don't have chicken manure this year, I've noticed. This should be everywhere. We have plenty of chickens. But I don't want you to go get it from the chicken coop. It needs to be composted for a period of time, long enough for it to not be hot. And that will help a whole lot. Then a dusting of lime, a sprinkling of some kind of organic nitrogen, like maybe cottonseed meal, to kind of kick the whole thing off and get our critters working. And then after that, when you plant, you will plant each. If there was no fertilizer in the mix that you started with, you'll certainly add some fertilizer at each planting. So I think that's a good way to look at it. Mix it all up and enjoy it, but also give yourself the chance to fertilize the plants after you fertilize the soil.
So we got chicken manure and
if possible,
that guano's okay. Seed.
Just pull up to the manure bar, right. You know, whichever one you want.
Yeah, the manure bar, and then also the cottonseed. I knew you were going to say that. The
I like cottonseed meal. Yeah.
So that's good to mix in there.
It's a good organic nitrogen source.
And there's piles of it all over the Delta.
There is. There's bags of it at the garden center too. So.
Yeah, you can go the easy route, right?
Absolutely. Again, you know what the analysis is. Somebody's looked at it and will tell you what's in it. So that's important. All those things are important. I have been surprised a couple of times this week. I have to say this one plant surprises me each year because it comes back when I don't really expect it to. And that is the purple oxalis, the purple clover. It's not purple clover like, you know, red clover, but the oxalis. And I think it's a really pretty plant. I wish I had started growing it in containers, but for some reason or another, it's in one of my flower beds. It comes up when nothing else does, and it's very happy there. So I yesterday went out there, and, oh, look, you've got some new leaves. That's great, because they've been sitting there with two leaves on them for 6 months, you know, since we went out of season for it. But it's a lovely plant. It's one that I recommend. I do recommend Diamond Frost again as well. That's another plant that we don't see as often in the garden centers as we did. The purple oxalis was real popular for a while. I'll tell you, you'll see it around St. Patrick's Day when they're selling green shamrocks. Generally speaking, somebody will toss in some purple shamrock plants in there, purple oxalis in there too. It's a lovely, lovely combination, something you might enjoy having together, as a matter of fact. Oh, yes, it is methyl. I got a note from somebody. The pollinating variety for plums on there at a garden center this morning looking at trees. Yes, methyl is a great pollinator. It's a good one to have. I recommend it. I suggest that you pick that one up. A lot of that stuff is on sale right now, you know. I just grabbed a couple of Jackmanii clematis because I like them so much. I'm giving them as a gift, and it's a beautiful plant. Those are the things that sometimes we buy them in the boxes, you know, at the garden centers or at any number of other kinds of stores. Don't shy away from that, particularly early in the season. Later on, you may see that they don't look so hot, but right now those things are all fresh, bright, and doing beautifully. And they'll be ready for you to help them out and give them a place to live. I like that. So much to talk about today. So many things going on. And I have to tell you that some of y'all's phone calls and whatnot have been really fun this morning. I'm getting such great texts from y'all. I appreciate you very, very much. We will take time to talk about time. We will take time to talk about, well, I don't know, it's World Seagrass Day, so maybe we'll talk about that. But one thing and another. And now, of course, it's time for another love song from the vault. Please stick around. This is the Garden Mama Show.
A kiss is so pure. Mid the morning dew. Real gold love. This Friday too. For eyes they talk and say, come on. What killed me, baby? Eat your head and chomp.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from 3 licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
Texting enrolls you in.
Tell mama, tell all the folks back home. Sometimes a man just feels he's got to make it alone. Tell mama, why I'm leaving so soon. Because this life I lead has got me sick through and through.
Oh, now. You know you don't need to leave mama. I'm here. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to help you. I'm happy. Don't be all by yourself over there. It's all right. Hey now, Maclura palmifera. I couldn't remember the name.
Who's that again?
Of Osage Orange. For those of you who have known me for a while, you may remember there was a period of time when I couldn't remember common names. It's because they had crushed all of the scientific botanical names into my head, and I lost the common names out in one of my ears. They've kind of come back around. Trauma does that to you. Comes back around a little bit, but I couldn't remember Maclura palmifera, which is, in fact, Osage Orange, which is Bodoc, which is, you know, you can basically go bowling with these fruits. They're the ones with the nubby green edges on them. And anyway, the point is that Our caller in the texter in the previous hour wanted to know the leaves had fallen off that had come out already. It shouldn't be a problem. It's probably not going to be really gorgeous this year, but it should not kill the tree. The tree is very hardy. That was a brief snap, and I doubt seriously that it hurt the roots. But it is a gorgeous tree and one that is in the mulberry family, as a matter of fact. Something you might or might not have known. I am a big fan of whales. For many, many reasons, but one of them has to be the crazy corgis. I don't really quote Princess Diana very much, but one of the funniest things that I ever understood her to have said was, that when the queen walked her corgis, it looked like the rug was rolling out in front of her, you know, because they're so low to the ground and so furry. And it's a beautiful image to me of what these dogs look like. They are just adorable. I do have, theoretically, I have Welsh people in my background. I've never done the genetic testing stuff, but that's what they tell me anyhow. They say that this dog has an elfish smile. I think that's because its ears are bigger than its head, and it just looks elfish because of that. But they are adorable. They were herding dogs, of course. They were very hardworking dogs that finally managed to achieve lap status, you know, and they're now, I'm sure there's still some that are out running the wild fields, but most of them are within the corgi community and very, very, very much, they're in the Spitz group. I don't know if y'all know Spitz. If you've ever seen a Samoyed that looked like it was too small to be a Samoyed, that's a Spitz. Okay, it's just a beautiful dog, but very, very different. So anyway, the corgis bring all of that intelligence and agility to your house if you happen to live with them. I know a couple of people who do. They're really pretty, really nice dogs. Today is Welsh Corgi Day. So you can go out and celebrate it, wear a mask perhaps, you know, put on an outfit. Or if you're going to Mardi Gras, you might want to march in the dog parades. The crew of Barkus and those things happened this week already in New Orleans. And I think and there's another one. I don't know what the dog crew's name is on the coast, but there's one at least in Mobile. The owner, Mrs. Saints, you know, her dog was the head of the Barkus parade. The dog did not look happy to be dressed up. So I just want to tell you, if you're dressing your dogs up, make sure they like it. Some do, some don't. That's just the truth. It is the Festival of Owls Week. I can only tell you that they're some of the most beautiful creatures and most fascinating that I have ever had a chance to observe. There's no reason in the world not to appreciate a good, lovely day looking out searching for owls, out birding for anything, but out searching for owls particularly. It's really cool, I think. I did not know, and this brings up a terrible question, y'all. How far would you go to save a creature that you love? And which ones would you not go so far for? Okay. Koala Catch 22 is the name of this particular story from the University of Sydney. Now, we understand that the koala population has big problems, all right? There's diseases that have caused it caused them to be infertile. And the only population that does not have this particular problem is southwestern Sydney. They're among the very, very few in New South Wales that are still free of the disease, okay? So since they are extremely inbred anyway with low genetic diversity, it's really hard to adapt them for them to adapt to a disease if they get it. So what are you going to do, okay? That's the question. There are people that want to spend gazillions of dollars because they love their koalas, you know, in preventing the disease or breeding out the disease or doing these things. But how far do you go? At what point do you figure that their time on Earth might not be so long? You know, that they're not the next step in their evolution. They're not going to be here. How far do you go? We have that problem in the garden. You know, we have Cavendish bananas. The bananas that you buy at the grocery store are 99 and 44 one-hundredths certain to be Cavendish, because those are the ones that can be shipped. They're the ones that can be ethylened while they're green in a boat and come to you ready to start ripening in your house. They also delicious, very productive, and easily farmed until they started getting diseases. So how far are we willing to go? How much is that banana worth? Do we need to continue to change how we, you know, genetically modify these things? Do you want to leave it up to fate? Do you want to have a study to study all the other bananas and find another one that can be shipped? You know, what are we going to do? These are things to ponder. I hope that this will give you something to talk about in your conversations this weekend, maybe over dinner. I don't know. I would go a pretty long way to save our pollinators, and in fact I have, because I don't use products that will negatively impact them and have not for 30 years. But if you if that's not your concern, maybe you want to invest in robotic pollinators. And we've certainly got some wonderful prototypes going. They've started using them. Maybe we need more of those. I don't know. It's just big stuff to consider. I always have a problem when I hear that someone has cloned their favorite dog rather than getting the next generation, you know, somewhere. I have trouble.
I read the other day Barbara Streisand
she had
cloned her
she did
twice.
Yeah.
And she was waiting to see if they were going to have the same brown serious eyes as one of them, because she had two from the same dog. And I was like, is that real?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay.
It is, and it's creepy.
Yeah, that was... I'm not easily creeped out,
as you may know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like, you know, wasps and things, so I'm not too easily creeped out. But I'm just not sure if that's necessary, okay? I'm just not sure if it's... I'm not sure what that does. I'm really not sure. But it's something for us to consider because it's going on all over the world. And the koalas, you even if you clone the koalas to make more of them, they still have the susceptibility to the disease that's keeping them from being able to multiply.
That's what I was thinking, that so, over time it would limit the gene pool substantially,
yeah, very,
right?
Seriously. That's part of the problem now, of course. Having to keep the populations in southwest part of that area isolated, how do you do that? You know, it's very difficult. I mean, at least they don't get on a plane, you know, and fly across country with their measles or something. But they do have, there are programs that are attempting to keep them more isolated. That's for sure.
Hey, before we move to the next topic, I was thinking the other day, thank goodness, and it kind of full circle today with our talk about, you know, people getting together and mm-hmm. family. But, mm-hmm. I mean, thank goodness Barbara Streisand and Mr. Brolin made it together, because you have, the Goonies would have never been made without little Josh. You know?
That's not her son, but okay.
It is, isn't it? I mean,
no.
Who is his mama?
No, I don't know. But
yeah, but it's that's his dad.
Yeah,
I thought his mom was Barb's.
No. No. Well, she's okay. It's his stepmom.
Okay.
I mean, sure she loves him, but it's not.
Okay, well.
Her son, she had her son with Elliot Gould.
Oh, Elliot.
About
okay.
100 years ago.
I like old Elliot.
Great actor.
Yes.
Great actor. But anyway.
But I digress.
People,
I apologize.
People find themselves, people who find love and are able to stay together for a long time, the families all kind of get absorbed anyway. So you have to make room for everybody. That's just how that works. I speak from experience. Do you know what the Gene Ontology Consortium is?
It sounds important.
I did not either. This is from University of Southern, I don't know, might be USC, might be, but it might be University of South Carolina. I didn't catch that when it was shown to me. This is a comprehensive resource, my friends, that describes the functions of more than 20,000 human genes. This is the dictionary of, what does that one do? Good grief. How hard? We could not have done this without computers. You understand we do have things, I mean, we process much more data than we ever could to find things that are alike and things that are different and all that sort of stuff. And in this particular case, they pulled together this into a comprehensive, it has been in fact released, the known functions of all protein-coding human genes. But this is the idea, is to collect data from other organisms and then culminated in this searchable public resource. This is just brilliant. It's not something I'm likely to go messing around looking for, but if you're a person, a young person, an old person, anybody who's interested in the specifics of genetics, you now have a place to go look stuff up you didn't have before. That's wonderful. It's like the first time they ever wrote down all the chess moves. You know, those used to be in people's heads. And they didn't teach them all to you until you were as old as, like, you know, there were categories of learning chess, but eventually somebody wrote it all down so the rest of us could at least be fascinated by it. I don't play chess, but at least it's interesting. My goodness. You know, I'll tell you something else that I just did this week. I realized that I have plants that can take the cooler weather outside now that it's not freezing anymore, and they are honestly leaping off the shelves to get out the door. One of the night blooming cereas fell over. There's nothing on the top shelf. It's up on a top metro shelf near the, I have high ceilings in my house. It's up near the top of the window. There's nothing there to make it knock down. It said, I'm out of here. Let me go. I'm gone. Open the door. Okay. Take it outside. Think about doing that, but be aware that depending on where you are, there might be some day or a couple of days when you need to cover them up for that night, because it's going to be cold again at some point a little bit. just, you know, keep them out of the wind, keep them in an area where you can protect them, or, again, with the wheels, where you can just roll them back inside if you need to.
Oh, I apologize. I didn't come jack the chair up and fix your coaster.
No, you didn't.
I'm so sorry.
I'm still stuck over here. My foot is stuck under the chair to keep it. It's just funny. This chair... For all of you who share office equipment, you're aware that people are different sizes and different habits, and so we just kind of try to get along.
I feel like when I sit in that chair, because it doesn't go up and down, I almost want to bring the one from in here out there.
So it'll go up and down.
Well, yeah, because I'm 6'4".
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say it would be helpful.
I feel like
you.
I'm sitting on top of the
table. Well, your knees are on the floor. Yeah. It's not good. Not good. I don't know. I think I better wait for the next segment. There's a whole bunch of stuff about critters that jump. It'll make you nervous if you're worried about the fleas that, you know, are jumping. They can jump 50 times their body length and whatnot. This is also the time that we begin to worry about the critters outside, whether it's the ladybugs you had to sweep up that were in the kitchen or whether it's the animals are bringing in the fleas and things. We do have to do some of that basic care stuff in our houses and in our gardens at this point in the
year. So we're talking about the insect side. I've seen the ladybugs, mm-hmm. seen the little mm-hmm. gnat things and mm-hmm. all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you know it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a natural, does the citronella stuff work?
Yeah.
Or what would you recommend?
There's some orange sprays that I like. I spray around the perimeter of my house a couple of times from between now and the summer, and it really does help slow them down.
Is there something that is plant safe that you would like to spray?
Yeah, the orange sprays that are intended for insects in the garden.
I remember that orange spray.
They're maintenance.
I put it on something, and it did get Hawk to quit eating it. I was like, well, he's not an orange fan. Good.
Now you know more than you knew the day before about what he would eat and what he wouldn't eat.
Well, another question in regard to that. My wife and I love hummingbirds. This is from the 662.
Mm-hmm.
What can we plant to draw them in more?
Oh, now just tee that question up.
Yeah.
Anything with flowers is going to help, particularly if they are tubular. So, for example, when I think about my favorite hummingbird plant, it is a honeysuckle with red trumpets that stick out. But you can also get that from cardinal vine. You can get that from trumpet vine. Those are the ones that really, really attract them and do a wonderful job with it. But any of, for example, annuals and perennials that have nice tubular flowers on them, especially if they're red, but they don't actually have to be red, are going to be favored. I like to say, you know, plant three heights, plant ankle height, knee height, hip height, and then other things higher up than that. But of course, give them a place to go around and around. Different colors, different flower shapes will increase the power of getting everybody in there. But for the hummingbirds in particular, look for tubular flowers, especially in red. And think about a honeysuckle vine, not the one that's wild, the one that you have to actually go buy at the garden center. You'll be glad you did. It won't invade your shrubs. All right, now, it's a good question. Let's all talk pollinators and dance a little bit. We'll be back.
We are the people, Mississippians. We are the land, growing food, fiber, and timber. We are there when you need us, from the roof over your head to the food on your table. We are small town, but big moments, your next door neighbors. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation. 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org. Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
Services.com.
I'm serenading you in Cajun.
You are.
And that's got it. We, you know, Mardi Gras time.
Come on, now.
Celebrate.
That's right. That's
and the
right.
Balfour Brothers, they make
come,
it happen.
Come Tuesday morning, there'll be, you know, chickens and all kind of things celebrating Mardi Gras.
I'm going to watch Southern Comfort, the movie, again this weekend after probably the 150th time just to celebrate my... My well, Cajun
you
love.
Will, you will hear some Balfour Brothers in that one.
Yeah.
No
hey,
doubt.
One question before we get too deep. Remind us again on the tomato planting and the proper soil to start them in, because we had a question there.
I like, if I'm starting the seeds myself, I that's one of the rare times that I buy a bag of something on the shelf and use it, something that is for seed starting. And I'll tell you the one that I happen to use this year, because I always tell you whichever one I ran into, is a Miracle-Gro seed starting mix that I found at Tractor Supply. It was great. It's been. I'm still using it for other stuff. It's beautiful.
And
it's
then
working well.
This one here, Ken tried something different. Mm-hmm. That's what we got. Ken in Jackson said he tried something different. It was on sale, and we got a pic of it up. It looks like a nice succulent.
Oh yeah, that's lovely. It looks. It's probably a Haworthia.
Haworthia. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Make sure that cup has drainage in it, because it will need to drain. And it's a lovely plant. That's a good price too.
Yeah, what, $482? Yeah, man, you got to go
that's
after
the woohoo the, price.
Yeah. Somebody worked hard to make that
that's,
get to that
that's
point.
True.
I think the little vase is probably worth $482.
You probably pay that. You pay that much for the container in some circumstances. That's for true. Haworthias are one of the easiest to grow succulents and one of the most distinctive. That dark green and kind of spots on the leaf and stuff. They're all kind of shaped like aloes, but they're not.
I was going to say it looked like my mama always kept a big aloe,
mm-hmm,
and if anything
mm-hmm
ever happened. That there was a skin ailment.
Sure.
Boy, she'd go cut off a piece of that and squeeze it on you, and you'd be good to go.
I'm in her corner. Yeah. I'm right there with her.
Burn.
I have the plant, and I also have a bottle of it in my house. Cause, well, let's...
She'd go in there with a little pocket
knife. Let's face it, I am not the most graceful person. I burn myself. I run into things. I get bruised, you know.
I told you about my experience with trying the knife use.
Well, there you go.
She had a little pocket knife. She could just cut it down. I mean... That's what, you know, master farmers and gardeners.
That's true. Like. When I talk about my grandmother's gardening, my comment is that she could plant broomsticks and grow brooms, because she literally could plant anything. She was really good. We all hope that that's genetic, but I'm afraid with me it's at least as much education and experience, because if you don't make some of your own mistakes, you got to go make your own mistake. You can't make the same mistake somebody else did.
Yeah.
So you learn from them, and then you go make your own mistakes.
What about bed bugs? Is there anything that you can grow or do in your house, something natural or anything to help rid yourself of
interestingly
bed bugs?
Enough that I believe that they're listed on these same orange sprays.
Okay.
They're the natural sprays that you run into. The brand name is not as important as the ingredients, and it will be a citrus distillate that you spray on stuff. And then, I mean, you know, it's, with bed bugs you have to vacuum and you have to bleach everything out and get everything taken apart and you all the stuff to get them actually out, because there's so many places where they can remain if they happen to be there. And my friend of blessed memory invented the term fleenoia. It's the same thing for bed bugs. They're gone, but you believe they're still there. So you're still, you know, paranoid about it. When kitty cats will do that to you with their fleas.
Well, and in Spanish, they're chinches.
Sí.
Chinches.
Sí, big
problem.
You
don't want no chinches.
No. Please, no. Please, no. Okay, jumping insects, y'all. I just realized I'm about to run myself out of time. This all started because, as we talked about, you know, we might need pollinating bees if the bees can't be, you know, can't get over the different issues that are surrounding some of those populations, and a lot of other things as well. There's now Harvard, the John Paulson School of Engineering and Applied Sciences at Harvard has made a jumping robot that is based on a springtail. Now, if you've ever seen you rake up some leaves and then suddenly they sort of start like that, they look like they're moving, that's probably springtails. They're not going to hurt you, but they jump, and that's how they get their food, is to jump from place to place. They are hexapods. I love that. It's obviously six. Anyway. But what they've done to these robots is to make them walk and jump. That is really better than the other small robots have been able to do. So that led me to, well, how far can that thing jump? It can jump 23 times its body length. This is the little robot. Well, that's clever. I like that. But fleas can jump 100 times their body length. every day, all day long, no problems. That's just what they do. And in fact, we've got some others as well that are pretty good. Leap roaches. Fortunately, only live on Table Mountain near Cape Town because they can really jump. They're big and they can jump. They're as big as grasshoppers, and they can jump faster and farther than grasshoppers can. But we've got two different kinds of ants. We've got jack jumper ants and Jordan's jumping ants that synchronizes the mid and hind legs both together to jump, and very few creatures do that. So we've got every kind of... Either they were trying to get away from something or they were trying to get to something. And the ones that could do this jumping are the ones that made it into the next generation. We're still into this, what determines whether or not your line goes forward. And sometimes it's whether or not you could either jump out of danger or jump to the next thing to eat. And in this case, I'm thinking that the Jordan's jumping ants are winning on this one. Brown and green lacewings go through simultaneous propulsive movements. They use their middle and their hind legs, so they're really different. Unlike lacewings, most bugs jump with one pair of their legs. But our friends, the lacewings that we love so much because they give birth to the aphid lions that eat in our house, you know, eat the critters for us, are wonderful. They're delightful. Tree hoppers live everywhere on Earth except Antarctica, and they have... They're distinct because they have gigantic thoraxes and are really colorful. So as a result, they more hurl themselves forward. They're not nearly as neat in their jumping, but they're not as crazy as grasshoppers. If you've ever watched grasshoppers jump, you think they don't know if they're going to land, you know, because they do. They fling out their arms and all this other kind of stuff. So the tree hoppers are a little bit different from that. The tree hoppers' jumping muscles are really incredible. The muscles themselves actually unroll. And then the jumping happens. Think about all the people that had to watch these things do this to tell us all of this great information. Crickets, of course, yes, they do grow another leg if they can, and they can jump, you know, six times their body length or so, maybe a little more than that. Another one of our two creatures that are jumpers that are in our plants and giving us some trouble from time to time, one is jumping plant lice. You don't even want to think about that, do you? I don't either. The other one is thrips. We talk about... For example, when you have a rose bud that doesn't open up and you cut it in half and there's little comma-looking critters inside of it, those are thrips. They're so tiny you don't even see them get on your plant, but they get into the flower and really mess it up. They have asymmetrical mouth parts, which apparently gives them an advantage in the way they land on the plant, which is another problem for us. But they're big flyers, do a lot of damage. And this is one of my other bits and pieces of information that I don't think to say often enough. The reasons for good air circulation, the reasons for good spacing between plants are not just so that you can appreciate the way each one looks, although that counts, but it's also so that these leaves don't touch each other and the insects have a harder time going from the one to the next, okay? It makes good sense. And so you say, okay, well, yeah, but you're putting good air circulation there. Well, maybe it'll knock them on the ground. I don't know, but we need to do something. Long-snouted weevils, of course, use their legs to jump as well. I hope you're doing some jumping this week. There's a lot to be doing in the garden, and it is going to involve a little bit of jumping and running and carrying on. So get busy with it, and we'll see you here next week.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.